Therefore, in Oregon, we are carrying a rather substantial burden that we know no way of getting rid of, short of amendments in the federal law. Mr. Brown alluded to the cost necessary to maintain a family. Well, a couple of things that we can't do anything about in this regard are, what about secondary wage earners? The family that already has a primary wage earner and a secondary wage earner, as was related to me by, or at least the story that was related to me by one of the more knowledgeable and knowing representatives of the opposition, at least as far as AOI is concerned, whose wife came to me one day and said, Tom, why don't you do something about this? I was playing bridge yesterday with three friends of mine, two of whom I found out during the course of playing bridge, and both are conference secretaries, are drawing unemployment compensation. Apparently have no desire to go back to work. Can't you do something about this? And I said, no. Every individual has got to be judged on his own merits, not upon any family unit income, not upon the way, the need or any other capacity which they have, simply on whether he is qualified or not qualified, whether qualified or disqualified to draw benefits on his own. So when we start talking about need, I'll be happy to talk to this committee anytime we want to about need. I'd like to talk about people who are making $12,000-$15,000 a year and are drawing benefits every year tax-free on top of that. The committee wants to talk about need. Let's get with it, but let's also remember that the federal government will not allow us, at least as far as we know it, to use that kind of a measure. Now, as far as the balance of the problem, we think that in this day and age, when the legislators themselves are complaining about being preempted out of their authority and responsibility to take action, that this is simply an action designed to go in that direction, to give up your legislative authority. Because if you do adopt such a program, you are no longer going to have any direct interest in the benefits side of the program, but you are sincerely going to continue to have an interest in the financing vis-a-vis tax side of the program. Now let's talk about taxes for just a minute. Mr. Brown has indicated there'd be no effect from this particular piece of legislation, because if it were passed, because it would become effective July 1, hence there would be no increase in tax rates next year as a result of it. I would tend to concur in this, except that I have been advised by Mr. Morton, director or administrator, employment division, and I asked him this for another reason, but it now appears pertinent to use it. It says, based on the current economic outlook, we estimate the trust fund will contain about $105 million by the end of March 31st and about $11 million on August 31st, 1971. Now, August 31st, 71 figure is the important figure because that is the day on which we determine the size of the trust fund and the tax rates that will be imposed on the following year. We estimate that with this balance, it will place us in Schedule 5 rather than Schedule 3, which we're now in. Now, Schedule 5, if you have your law in front of you, looks something like this in the book. And this is the lowest set of tax rates that's available. We are now here with a 1.2 to a 2.7. We are going to a 1.6, 2.7. 1.6 minimum. The increase, we went from the first column to the third column this year. The increase in taxes is approximately $10 million. Went up from $29 million to approximately $39 million. Going from 3 to 5, column 3 to 5 will probably not produce quite $10 million, probably more on the order of the $7.5 to $8.5 million additional. So that's the first increase that we've got. Now, earlier in this session, because we are concerned about adequacy, and about ability to pay taxes, which the legislature says that we employers must do, we supported an extended benefits tax to support the extended benefits program. We can't tell you yet what that's going to cost, because we don't know whether the extended benefits program is going to go all the way through 1971, or whether it's going to go into 72. But that's an additional tax cost. Uh, for each dollar that is raised, and depending upon the year, you've got a cost of $350,000 to $750,000 per dollar of increase. Increase here? It's depending upon the year. The best pattern we had, and I assume Mr. Brown alludes to 1969 because it was the lowest unemployment year virtually in history. 1971 is going to be the highest. At least fiscal 77. A dollar in 69 would have raised about $350,000 per dollar of increase. This year, it's going to be more like $750,000 per dollar of increase. First of all, we paid out, I think in 1969, we paid out $23 million in benefits. In calendar 70-71, we're going to pay out about January 1, 71, we've already paid out $52,500,000 in benefits. All right, so if you were a claimant, or all claimants, in 1969, which were obviously lowest, if you put this kind of a bill into effect at that time, during that year, the cost would have been $375,000 per dollar of increased benefit. This is forgetting the base cost, up to the $55 max, taking from 55 to 68 and the other changes that are involved. That $13 plus some other changes is worth about $350,000 per each dollar you increase, or multiply it by 350 times 13 to get your cost. You want to use the most recent experience, it's going to be close to $750,000 times 13. And that's what employers are going to have to pay. We used a contracyclical type of financing. In 1963, we came to this legislature and asked for a brand new method of financing to obviate the kind of problems that the Brown raised. That is, in fact, coasting. We knew we had to have a program which paid its own way. And we've been paying our own way since then. So I've already suggested we are a very high-cost state compared to all states. I think there's one other factor in all this. Oregon is also an exporter of its products. Unemployment costs have to be added to it. We happen to be a heavy net exporter. Therefore, these kinds of costs must be carried into the marketplace, along with our high transportation costs to market, and a number of other things. Just one of another incidence of this problem. The program itself, and this is our financing program, is based upon our highest cost years, this is adjusted. This was 1958. Benefits that were paid in 1958 with a $40 benefit. Is that a $40 benefit or a $35 benefit? Yeah. 58. All right. $40 benefit in 1958, we paid out, and the high quarter formula, so-called, which Brown alluded to, was in effect. We paid out $43,415,000. With a $55 benefit and unemployment something like 1.5 percentage points adjusted below 1970. Paid out $52,500,000. But our financing program says that we must take that high cost year, the last 15 years, of $43,400,000, adjust it by increases in our workforce, increases in the weekly benefit amount, and on August 31st of 1971, it will take $83,000,000 in the trust fund to cover the cost of a similar year to 1958. And only after we have that amount in the trust fund can we give any merit rating. In other words, experience rating to employers whose basic benefit costs run considerably less or just plainly less than their tax, than their benefit costs are less than their tax input into the program. That is simply used as an illustration to show you how rapidly the demands of this program are growing and will grow in the future as you adjust the new benefit schedule. Now, Mr. Brown alluded to the fact that it was only in the first 4 years of the program, ending in 1941, that benefits were at 50% of the average weekly wage. What his information fails to point out is that in 1942, the federal government imposed substantial federal income taxes on all wage earners for the first time, and those tax rates have remained virtually with us unchanged, except for the federal tax reduction of about 7 years ago and the surcharge of the last 3 years. The evaluation of maximum weekly benefits as a percentage of the average weekly wage on a net take-home basis after deducting federal, state, and social security taxes will show you that benefits have been very close to 50% of that figure. And this, we believe, is the only real comparison that can be made with the early years of the program when the wage earner earning the average was earning the average weekly wage in the state. The benefits were 50% of the AWW. Because he didn't have federal taxes, state taxes, and social security taxes, etc. I'm going to give you some figures in a little while, just a minute, to show you how fast this is escalating up, and the fact that you cannot forget the impact of federal, state, and social security taxes. Now, as far as AOI's policy is concerned, and what I'm here today to present it, is that we do, as a matter of fact, after all the commentary to the contrary, we understand the benefits are lagging, and that they should retain some rational relationship to the increases in the wages in the state. To this end, AOI adopted a policy in 1962 in which we have presented the legislature in 63, 65, 67, and 69. And it has produced benefit increases over that period of time. So our policy is that the legislature should review benefits and financing under this program each legislative session. And they've had that opportunity in every session that I've been around. Secondly, that maximum benefit amount should equal 50% of the average weekly wage of the state after deducting federal, state, and social security taxes. This to be stated in terms of a dollar maximum, not as a percentage, in the law. The average weekly wage for the most recent prior year, which would be 1970, should be the average weekly wage used by the legislature in arriving at the maximum benefit amount. Now let's illustrate the point tonight. I'm going to have to give you these figures, but they are, I went over them last night again. The department has not actually computed the final figure for the average weekly wage for 1970, but it is in the range of $135 plus or minus 25 cents, they tell me. Now, as I suggested to you already, we do not know what a claimant is for unemployment. Each individual is determined on his own merits. So we use the average claimant from workman's compensation who we can determine. It's a man, wife, and 1 2/3 children. We have no reason to believe that a person who is unemployed would be any different than in a random sample would be different than a workman's comp claimant. $135 for a man, wife, and 2 children. He has $9.90 in federal taxes, $7.02 in social security taxes, and $3. State income tax. Pay heed to that Social Security tax figure at that level. And it's still going up for the next 8 years. That would produce $15.08 as an average weekly wage. When divided by two, would produce $57.54, and then raised to the closest 50 cents, which produced a $58 weekly benefit. Now, I would be less than candid if I did not report to you what happened last session. This bill was first heard in the legislature, and identically the same bill was heard first in the Senate and then in the House. The Senate said, all right, the concept looks all right, except that we only meet every 2 years. Therefore, they increased the amount to 52.5% of the figure of the average weekly wage, which in this case, which at that time we were recommending $53, and it's 52.5%, produced $55. Here we're recommending 58%, but if the philosophy is correct that you only need every 2 years and that would allow a lag, then 52.5% would produce $60.41, or a $60 benefit, using the language of the statute, which says it's the closest dollar.
Well, you know, it's about a half hour now.
Well, let me conclude simply by saying that employment benefits are tax-free, should equate to net take-home pay. They are spendable dollars. I would suggest to you that most of the states that are, at least the ones that Mr. Brown used, have a sales tax which robs the unemployed earner some money. Also, gross pay rises faster than net take-home pay, and in the future, as benefits, wages, and taxes all increase, benefits based upon the gross will come awfully close to achieving a level, as I can show you if I wanted to give you some more figures, a point at which we get concerned as to whether people have a real desire to go back to work. It would take an average weekly wage, incidentally, of $165 to produce the $68 benefit on our formula, produce the $68 benefit that Mr. Brown is suggesting under the desolated proposal. $165 for a single man would only produce $62, taxes being what they are today. With that, I'd be happy to conclude my testimony and answer any questions that you may have.
One of the theories that was originally advanced for unemployment compensation was not only the assistance to the unemployed person, but the assistance to the business community that it gives by keeping money in circulation. Now, if that theory is any good, then don't you have to figure that in or crank that in to your argument someplace, because the lower the purchasing power of the individual is, the worse your businessman is going to be on.
I only touched on it and I didn't answer it precisely. The theory is that the only people that should draw benefits, and if you go clear back in 1935 and look at the original report of the commissioner to President Roosevelt, which I'd be happy to produce a copy of in the 40s, they said, we don't pay seasonal people any benefit. We can't afford to. So we're not doing, and we're doing safe at ever higher benefit levels. And in some cases, these people do have a need. I don't discount that for a moment. But many of them do not. They're following the historic wage pattern that was conceived in the late 1900s or the late 1800s, and it's continued right on through to today, up to the point that President Nixon has just done something rather dramatic in the building trade. That is, the industry recognized a long time ago, those seasonal industries, that they had a problem, and so they raised wages to a point that they could afford, a guy could afford to stay over the winter and come back the following spring. Now we've gone down that road, and we don't take that into account, and we pay them every year.
But this doesn't answer my question, and that was, notwithstanding whatever you. But you said it may be true. It still doesn't answer the question, and that is, if your unemployment benefits are higher, does not the businessman profit by it? Because these, as you pointed out, these are essential dollars that are going to spend. And they're going to be spent on essentials that they took.
Are you talking about 1970, or are you talking about 1969? I'm not talking about calendar 70, are you talking about 1969, when we were at the height of our so-called prosperity, when we had nothing but frictional unemployment, when you couldn't find anybody to work for you, yet we still had substantial unemployment, Mr. Sheldon. Now, which situation are you talking about? I'll go with you today.
I'm talking about 70, 71, 72. When we're going to have high unemployment,
yeah.
And where these people have got to have some purchasing power, they're going to keep the business economy going.
Well, let's just take it out of somebody else's pocket to produce. You all got a copy of this Financing Oregon Unemployment Insurance early in the session. I don't know if any of you looked at it. But on pages 63, 64, and 65, there are four economic assumptions for the state of Oregon and unemployment. And pattern A is the most favorable. It's only a 3.6% unemployment pattern. Table B assumes a 3.9% unemployment pattern. Pattern C suggests 4.4, and pattern D suggests 4.9. And it says, although this pattern is considered unlikely to occur, it is not at all unrealistic. This was printed in October 1970. It was prepared sometime along in June, and I would suggest to you that the author of the book hit it right on the nose, because his projection for 1970-71 is right on the nose. So if we take the economic statistics of the department, then we better look at pattern D and the cost of pattern D over the next 10 years, which is the projection. Because he's right on the money. And I hate to argue with statisticians who work for the program.
One more question.
Mm-hmm.
You said that the program cost in 1948 $44 million in benefits paid out, and you estimate 71, 83 million.
No. If we had a recession of equal severity, we did not have a recession of equal severity to 1958.
Is this payout 58 or 48?
This payout, the one I'm talking about, the $44 million was in exactly 43.4, was in 1950. 50. The 40 with a $40 benefit.
All right. And what's that payout going to be?
It's going to be on an unemployment rate adjusted of 1.5 to 2% lower, 52.5. And it is 52.5 for the most recent 12 months ending January 71.
And we're going to pay out less in actual dollars when you consider inflation and the cost of the dollar. We're going to pay out less in 1971 than we did in 1958.
Well, not if we had the same magnitude of unemployment. We haven't had the same magnitude of unemployment.
That's total cost, though. If we compare $58 to $71, we're going to be paying out less in actual dollars.
No. Benefits have gone up $15, but the base of the program is $40. Everybody collects $40. You still are getting fewer people qualifying at the top.
Thank you.
Tom, could you give me the figure on the increase, if any, in Washington, and the increases in the benefits? I'm talking about employer rates.
Yes. Their merit rating, which I think is, no, they wiped it out. They had a special session in 1970 after arriving at a rather dismal situation, which we did not arrive at, of having the highest average weekly wage in the state, or the relationship, let me put it, of their benefit to their average weekly wage had gotten to be the worst in the United States. They ranked about 9th, I think, in average weekly, the national average weekly wages were about 18. Their benefit was $42. There had been a lockup in that state since at least 1960, 59-60, which neither side, and they both apparently had enough ability with the legislature to make their positions both known, but the program didn't change. It was allowed to remain static for almost 10 years. And the legislature finally said, no, we're not going to do that. They had a special session, and they simply went to an escalator. Under the conditions which existed in that state for that period of time, I guess maybe the legislature was right in saying we don't want to have anything to do with the program. Or it's the benefit, too much of a problem. As far as the costs are concerned, they like we will go to a $4,200 tax base as of January 1, 1972, by a piece of legislation that will be before the committee later on, October 1294, which will have to pass to conform with the federal law. That will